body by their diligence, they contribute importantly to research, they earn patents for the university, and they pay full tuition. I think it is terribly misguided, counterproductive, and another way in which we are shooting ourselves in the foot, said Michael Roth, president of Wesleyan University. Many university leaders have said the same. Beyond those contributions, Chinese students and all other international students, especially those from countries with human rights issues, may absorb liberal values that may one day prove critical to their country's political futures. By denying Chinese the opportunity to study here and pushing a tariff war, the U.S. is feeding the Chinese view of America, its double standards, racism, and unreliability. And that view has gained significant currency around Asia and beyond. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, Lexis Ponce, and Mel Gertoff. Their producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Northwest Office Liquidations, a family-owned business in Portland for over 30 years, offering an inventory of office furniture, full-service office design and space planning, and liquidation services. More info at northwestofficeliquidations.com.
Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez. Just ahead of the Memorial Day weekend, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Budget Reconciliation Bill, a massive tax and budget package. If this bill ultimately becomes law, it will, among other things, force deep cuts to safety net programs, especially Medicaid and nutrition assistance. One of the members of Congress who voted no on the bill was Representative Andrea Salinas, who represents Oregon's 6th Congressional District. My colleague Alejandro Queral, Executive Director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy, had a chance to speak with Representative Salinas about what the budget reconciliation bill would mean for Oregonians and the people of this country, and also what comes next. Here is their conversation.
Well, thank you for being on Policy for the People, Congresswoman Salinas. It's been a week since the U.S. House of Representatives passed, by the narrowest possible margin, a budget reconciliation bill, a massive tax and budget package. You voted no on the bill. What's your bottom line assessment of this legislation?
My bottom line is this is a terrible bill, not just for Oregonians, but for almost all Americans. First off, it's a $4 trillion tax cut that mostly goes to very wealthy individuals at the expense of those who do not make very much. And we are adding to the deficit, putting that on the backs of our children. And we know that that deficit is harming our bond rating. Moody's already downgraded our bond rating, which means it's more expensive to borrow money. And this adds about $2 trillion every year to our tax debt. So it is a horrible bill. But let me just tell you, you know, what it does essentially is for families who earn about $50,000 or less, they would get just under $300 in tax cuts. Those who make over $1 million would receive an average $90,000 $90,000 in tax breaks. But that $300 for the lower income, it would get eaten up by the elimination of healthcare benefits under Medicaid, as well as some of the SNAP and nutrition benefits that these families may receive.
You sit in the House Agriculture Committee, which, among other things, has jurisdiction over the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, or what used to be That's called right. food stamps. So talk to us about the importance of the SNAP program and the changes that the reconciliation bill makes to SNAP.
So the thing about the SNAP program and the nutrition programs is it really does help our working families to make ends meet. We know here in Oregon, rent is very high. People are having a hard time sometimes making their mortgage payments, and they're on the brink, right? But they're working two or three jobs. And so food assistance, or SNAP, as you said, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, helps these Americans. And these are folks who maybe are disabled, are older Americans, are children, are veterans. Those are people who, and you know, maybe just work part-time, maybe don't have the ability to work full-time, but they need to help make ends meet. And we as Americans offer them $6 a day, $2 a meal to help them get food. And we are hearing right now from our food banks and our food pantries that the need for food right now is up by about 30% over what it was during the pandemic. But what this bill does is it is basically the largest cut in food assistance in American history. We could likely see 800,000 Oregonians who depend on SNAP could be harmed by this bill. And so I don't understand how these Republicans are saying that it's going to increase efficiency when you can't work when you don't get food. You can't go to school when you don't get food. And you are likely more sick when you don't get food. And so this is only going to harm our economy. It's going to harm those who contribute to our society already. And it's going to leave a lot of people out on the streets hungry.
One of the things that I think is really clear on the bill is that a lot of this cut to the benefits and services are not straight up cuts. They're not taking directly money away, but rather doing a number of what I would say are tactics to try to hide those cuts from public view. One of them in the context of SNAP is the idea of cost shifting the benefits to the states. In other words, the states would be on the hook for paying what traditionally has been paid by the federal government. Oregon, it's been estimated, would be on the hook for $1 billion in order to maintain the current level of service. So what does that cost shift mean to the state and more importantly, to Oregonians if the state is not able to meet that need?
So this is exactly my point, and I think this is what you're getting at as well, which is if the state can't meet that nearly $1 billion to provide the nutrition assistance themselves, so if Oregon can't, and I don't think they can, they're not going to be able to afford that. What will happen is people will go without food. And you're right, they're trying to hide it and veil it as, oh, we're just making the states pay what they need to pay. And how they're doing this is they're saying, oh, the states have this error, right? And this is that efficiency that they're talking about, right? Oh, we're just trying to make them, you know, do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, they need to be on the hook for abiding by the law. Well, Oregon does abide by the law. This error rate that is being talked about, Oregon actually makes overpayments, and so they pay more than they're supposed to, but that still is considered an error. And so the error that happens is they're paying more than their fair share right now, but the federal government now is saying, oh, well, that's an error rate, so you need to be on the hook for this $1 billion in SNAP for, you know, people in Oregon who need this food assistance. And I call BS on it. It's smoke and mirrors, and it's nothing more than a way to cut people off of food assistance.
You also mentioned that the choices that congressional Republicans are making and have incorporated into this bill would have an impact on the economy and certainly impact the Oregon economy. Agriculture is an important part of our economy in the state. How does that reconciliation bill affect farmers?
You know, we talked a lot about this in the House Agriculture Committee, at least on the Democratic side, because our growers and our farmers actually sell to USDA, and they sell to, you know, they purchase, you know, the federal government is one of the largest purchasers of dairy products, of food directly from our farmers. And so to cut this program means to cut the ability of farmers to sell to the U.S. government. So that is not helpful to our growers across the nation. So this is a big part of it as well. And I think people don't realize, you know, a lot of those nutrition programs that go through the schools, sometimes that is the only meal a child may get in a day is from their school. And whether it's breakfast or lunch, it might be the only one or two meals that child gets. This will be harmed under this bill. So Democrats brought this up a lot. We brought so many amendments up to basically fix this that would give our growers some additional avenues for more revenue and to give our kids additional meals. But no, at every turn, we were shot down.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Policy for the People. In this special episode, my colleague Alejandro Queralt spoke with Representative Andrea Salinas about the budget reconciliation bill recently passed by the U.S. House. Congresswoman Salinas represents Oregon's 6th Congressional District. Here is the rest of their conversation.
In addition to the cuts to food assistance, the reconciliation bill also makes big cuts to Medicaid, what is known in Oregon as the Oregon Health Plan. I know that when you were in the Oregon legislature, you served as the chair of the House Healthcare Committee, and so you know very well the progress we have made as a state to expand access to healthcare. So I wonder how you see the changes to Medicaid in the reconciliation bill. What do you anticipate could be the impact to Oregonians who are concerned about losing healthcare coverage?
Well, I will say, I think this is the piece that Republicans are running from right now, because a lot of Republican districts across the U.S. have their constituents and their voters rely on Medicaid, or like you said, or what we call here the Oregon Health Plan. So this bill will take away healthcare from about 13.7 million people, almost 14 million people across the U.S., and just 1.4 million here in Oregon. So this will be devastating. And as you know, Alejandro, when you take, and this is about a, just about a $4 trillion cut. When you take, or no, excuse me, that's the whole package. It's almost a trillion dollars. So it's almost $900 billion from the healthcare system. When you take that kind of money out of the healthcare system, we are going to see, again, a cost shift to others who may pay premiums, who may have private insurance. Our premiums are going to go up. But it is definitely going to be a cost shift. And those who lose out are going to be those who have insurance and pay for it. And then those who no longer have insurance will have to seek care at the emergency room, where care is more expensive. In fact, Congresswoman Bonamici and I, just yesterday, we held a town hall to look at the effects of these cuts into Medicaid and what our mental health and behavioral health system will look like. And, you know, people have a lot of trauma right now. Oregon is one of the top states in terms of need for mental health access, whether it's adolescent health, mental health care or substance use disorders. And we are one of the states who has the least access to care. So we're towards the bottom in terms of our access to care. And this bill will only exacerbate that problem and make it so much worse. And I got a question from a reporter the other day, and they said, what would that ultimately mean? And I said, it will mean people will die. They will die, you know, deaths that are just, you know, too soon, too sudden, and they won't be able to access the care they actually need.
The human impact is profound. And you know, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how the reconciliation bill goes after states that have, with their own money, paid for undocumented immigrants' access to healthcare. I think this is an area that has not been discussed enough, but could have a deep human impact to immigrant communities.
Oh my gosh, it certainly will. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's no secret, Alejandro, that I helped to pass the bill to expand access to healthcare for all people who live in Oregon. And it's a good policy. And the reason it's a good policy is because I just mentioned the most expensive form of care is in the emergency room. So we don't want people going there, right? It makes the whole system more expensive. And right now we're seeing our emergency rooms overrun with those who do have substance use disorders and maybe have addiction problems. or mental health problems where the emergency room can't care for them. But we want to avoid the emergency room. And so this bill would, you know, we started off by basically allowing kids to get, you know, kids who may be undocumented to get access to vaccines and to be in our school system and to, you know, to make sure that they're healthy and learning. And then we expanded it to all people. Well, the federal government is now threatening states through the Affordable Care Act and basically saying we are going to, and basically with our Medicaid program, and basically saying if you continue to fund with your own state dollars, we will take away Medicaid dollars from, you know, citizens of the state of Oregon and of the United States. And that's a hard place for the, you know, for the Oregon legislature to be in. They're going to have to make a hard decision to figure out, do they continue to, you know, to cover all people, or do they have to make a decision to help the people who, you know, who could continue to be covered by the federal government under Medicaid?
You mentioned that you were holding some town halls and during the recess. I'm curious about what you're hearing from your constituents about this massive tax and budget package.
Oh, my goodness. So we've been holding town halls for, you know, a number of months since, you know, since I was first sworn in January. And what we're hearing is people are scared. They're scared and they're afraid of what is going to happen for all the reasons I just mentioned, right? It doesn't matter if, first of all, almost everyone across the United States either is on Medicaid or knows somebody, has a loved one who knows, you know, who's on Medicaid or relies on the nutrition program. So people are very familiar with these programs and they know how they help to bridge gaps in family budgets. And so people are afraid. They're afraid of the cuts that they're seeing in the, you know, Social Security Administration not being able to get through. They're afraid of what this is going to mean for Medicare. This bill, I don't think this has been talked about enough either. It is actually going to restrict some of the funds through Medicare. And so we need to make sure that this bill is changed before it gets out of the Senate. It's going to be harmful on a lot of different levels. People are, like I mentioned, they're afraid, they're unsure, and their lives feel very unpredictable right now.
Thank you, Congresswoman Salinas. We're almost out of time, but I wonder if you have a parting message that you would like to leave to our listeners regarding the reconciliation bill and what comes next.
Yes, I want to end the way you started. This was a narrowly passed bill on the House side. Two Republicans voted against it, and two didn't even show up for the vote. And we need to change this bill in the Senate. We need to get it back on track so it's fairer on the tax cuts and it restores some of the Medicaid, even some of the Medicaid. But I would love if we restored all of the Medicaid and SNAP benefits. But right now, as it exists, it just benefits billionaires and millionaires at the expense of some of our most vulnerable people in across America and here in Oregon. And these are working families who, again, are trying to make ends meet. So we can do it. Let's keep pressure on the Senate. Let's make sure they change it. And then we will have to deal with it when it comes back in the House. But I am optimistic. And I've been talking to, you know, at least our Oregon senators on how that bill can be changed. So your listeners should probably call in and do the same.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman Salinas. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Policy for the People. We will see you next time.
The Elliott State Research Forest is one key milestone closer to saving wildlife in Oregon. The Oregon Department of State developed a habitat conservation plan for the Elliott State Research Forest in Oregon. On May 28, 2025, the service announced a Record of Decision and the issuance of Endangered Species Act Incidental Take Permit for the HCP. I spoke with Josh Laughlin, the Executive Director of Cascadia Wildlands, on what this permit does. We're talking about a key permit that the Elliott State Research Forest just got from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Before we get into that, for folks who don't know, what is the Elliott State Research Forest?
The Elliott State Research Forest is a spectacular publicly owned temperate rainforest located in the Oregon Coast Range just northeast of Coos Bay. And it houses remnant mature and old growth forests where much of the Oregon Coast Range was clear cut in years past. Approximately half of the Elliott is still intact and has never been logged, and it provides unique habitat for a host of species that are teetering on the brink of extinction, like wild salmon and marbled murrelets, which is a coastal seabird that uniquely nests inland in remaining old growth forests, and northern spotted owls and a host of other imperiled species. Also provides clean water and carbon storage to mitigate climate change. And the research forest was recently created and provides a real unique opportunity moving forward where innovative forest and watershed research can occur as a primary management driver.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife issued an Endangered Species Act incidental take permit for the Elliott State Research Forest. What does that mean?
So there's a new management paradigm taking place on the Elliott. For decades, the Elliott was clear-cut to fund school children, and that arrangement was further imperiling endangered species. So we helped create a new arrangement on the forest where the school fund obligation was bought out and satisfied, so we're no longer pitting school children versus the environment. And what's taken place there now is the creation of the Elliott State Research Forest. And what was just issued yesterday by the federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was a key wildlife permit in order for this Elliott State Research Forest to become operational. And the permit essentially creates a system of checks and balances and safeguards for imperiled species on the Elliott to ensure they have the protection measures necessary to persist into the future, particularly during the 80-year term of the permit that was issued.
Was there a concern that the federal officials would react differently under the Trump administration?
There's been widespread buy-in around the creation of the Elliott State Research Forest from stakeholders across the spectrum. It's really a unique arrangement that prioritizes water quality and imperiled species habitat and carbon storage. Tribal involvement and knowledge will be incorporated into it. So it really had incredible buy-in from a diversity of stakeholders. So our assumption all along was that it would be advanced and get approved. And that's, in fact, what happened yesterday.
With these permits, what will the habitat conservation plan look like?
One of the big things that the habitat conservation plan does on the Elliott State Research Forest is it designates a significant protected area that's 34,000 acres on the Elliott's west side, and that was created to help recover species that are teetering on the brink of extinction that require complex old rainforests to survive. Species like the marbled murrelet, which is a seabird that uniquely nests inland in old growth forests, and northern spotted owls, and Oregon coast coho salmon. So this large block protected area is incredibly unique and will offer those protection measures into the future for those species. Additionally, there's small reserves designated throughout the rest of the Elliott that will benefit imperiled species as well. The majority of any logging activity that will take place in the Elliott will be primarily focused in the Elliott's second growth plantations. So those are designated more on the east side of the Elliott.
What is important to know about the endangered bird species in this forest?
There's a couple of species of birds that call the Elliott home, specifically the marbled murrelet and the northern spotted owl. The marbled murrelet is incredibly unique in that it spends the majority of its life bobbing around the ocean not far from the coast, fishing and doing what seabirds do. But uniquely, it flies inland. And keep in mind, these are seabirds with webbed feet, but they fly inland to drop a single egg on a mossy nest in an old-growth tree in the Oregon Coast Range. And the species, the marble murrelet here in particular, has seen a significant decline in its population over the last 100 years, largely due to habitat loss through clear cutting. So it's critically imperative that we protect remaining mature and old growth forests in the Oregon Coast Range to help not just recover this imperiled species, but also for the carbon storage values old growth forests offer that help mitigate climate change, for the clean water these old growth forests purify, for the recreation opportunities and all the other values they provide Oregonians.
Have you encountered any misconceptions about the Elliott State Research Forest Plan?
We have not. You know, it's really in its infancy right now with the issuance of these federal permits. You know, all eyes will be on the Elliott State Research Forest, this incredible publicly owned forest in the Oregon Coast Range. And the public's very interested to follow it, to track it, to experience it, to go down there and look at it, to recreate in it. And most importantly, to ensure that genuine cutting-edge and innovative research is taking place on the Elliott. And uniquely, and what's embedded in these federal permits as well, is we anticipate tribal involvement and knowledge into experiments and research on the forest. So we're particularly interested to see that and see what gets proposed in that context.
You're the executive director of Cascadia Wildlands. What does your organization do?
Cascadia Wildlands works to defend and restore the landscapes and species of the Cascadia bioregion in the forests, in the courts, and in the streets. And essentially, we work to keep it wild in this incredible region that we live in. We work to safeguard remaining old-growth forests, help recover species that are teetering on the brink of extinction, like the gray wolf and the marbled murrelet and wild salmon. And we work to help confront the climate crisis by keeping these big old trees standing, because when they're cut, they release a significant amount of greenhouse gas that help exacerbate the climate change. So yeah, that's a little bit about what we do. And we achieve our goals through grassroots organizing, policy creation, and litigation. And our legal department is very busy, as you could imagine, right now under the policies and directives being set in Washington, D.C.
If our listeners are interested in learning more about your organization or forest conservation, are there resources you would recommend?
Yeah, Cascadia Wildlands has a unique program called the Wildcats. It's an acronym that stands for Cascadia Action Team, and we plug interested community members into the Wildcat program, where they can go out and field check proposed timber sales on our state and federal public lands to explore these threatened landscapes that are being proposed to be logged. It's an opportunity to not just connect with these public lands, but also to get to understand them better, the species and the federal processes that go into public lands management, and most importantly, see what's threatened out there and begin to develop an appreciation for these special places so we can develop more advocates for them into the future.
Do you have any final thoughts?
If people are interested in connecting with Cascadia Wildlands, we're based in Eugene, and our website is caskwild.org.
For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Lexis Bunsen.
Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member.